This is an interview with Mr. Emil Renner for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the Ray in School. It's being done by Mark Conley at Mr. Robert Renner's residence on at 43 Gypsy Lane. It's November 22nd, Friday, and it's approximately 11 a.m. Mr. Renner, would you please talk a little bit about your family background?
Okay. I was born in Worcester, Ohio. In 1883, and when I was about 6 years old, we moved to Youngstown, Ohio. My father was a brewer, and he bought the brewery here, Old Pike Street. And when I was 7 years old, my mother and Katie Hetrick took me to Uncle Tom's cabin. We walked over the little bridge there. I bought the big Market Street bridge. It was a little bridge over the river. Then we walked over the Pennsylvania tracks and the B&O tracks. And we got back about 11:15. And it was always our custom to drink a little beer in the evening. We got a little wine, a little beer, we got a taste of everything. It seems that when people drink at home, they do not drink to excess. Well, Mother told me to go in and ask Mr. Richter for a pitcher of beer, and I did. Mr. Richter went to go into the cellars, and there was a terrific explosion, and it took his head off right at the neck. Knocked me against the ice machines and blew the head of the boiler across the river. And it lay on the, on the south bank for 15 years before it disintegrated. And Father had just built Mother a new home there. And small town in those days, men from all over the city came over. And they played three garden hoses on at the house. And my mother was not afraid of the fire or afraid of anything. She tried to save everything she could save. She gave the silverware, all of the light stuff, linens and so on, to people whom she didn't know. The men, see? And in 3 weeks, everything was back, and Mother never lost a spoon. The house did catch on fire. They called Mother, and she came out and she said, "Oh, you men can do that. I'm not afraid of fire. Put that out." See? Well, anyhow, the house was right alongside of the brewery, and the brewery had burnt down to the ground. And Father was broke. He had $18,000 insurance. And to show you what happened in those days, Mr. Henry Garlick, who was president of the First National Bank, he called up Father, and Father went over. Said, "How are you fixed?" He says, "I need $70,000. I've got $18,000 insurance." Mr. Garley said, "Sign this note." Gave Father $35,000. Father said, "I have no security." He said, "That's all right." He said, "You look like a strong fellow. Look like you'll make it." And he lent Father $35,000 without any security. And also Lewis I. Aaron from Pittsburgh, who was a malt man, he came up. And he lent Father $35,000. So that built the new brewery. Now,
okay.
In those days, you know, people, everybody had consideration for everybody else. Everyone would help. And all of these men, now this has happened at 11:30 at night around that, and they all came from all over town. Youngstown was a small town. And everybody was out to help.
How long did it take your dad to get his business back in operation after the fire?
Oh, well, I would say that was about a year, not quite a year.
Mm-hmm. And how long did it take before he got over the damages of the fire?
You mean when it paid off?
Right.
How long? It paid off in 3 or 4 years. Paid off all of his money. In 3 or 4 years. Paid his pay.
Uh-huh. And did he sell to just the Youngstown area?
Just in the Youngstown area at that time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you see, in those days, there was no violence. No violence at all. I remember, of course, when I was older, we had a collector, Fred Gerdes, Mr. Fred Gerdes. He was in the horse and buggy days. He carried a satchel, and he put the money in the satchel. And he also carried a gun, but he put the gun in with the money. So, it never had to use a gun. You could go to the bank, you could carry your satchel, you'd park 300 or 400 feet from the bank and walk in with a bundle of money. No one bothered you then.
Mm-hmm. When did you notice a change? When did you notice you start needing protection?
Well, violence began after the First World War and after Prohibition. That was in 1919. That's when violence began. We had absolutely no violence in Youngstown before that.
Mm-hmm. What started happening after 1919?
Well, that story I told you about that I didn't want to put on the tape.
Uh-huh.
That was the first one. And after that, it increased and increased, you know. Now, in the olden days, you could go to any part of the city and be well received. Not like today. Today you might go to some parts of the city and be relieved instead of received. So things have changed. There's no violence at all in those days. I went to St. Joseph's School on the corner of Rain and Phelps Street. And I lived on Pike Street. We'd walk over. We had about, I'd say 30 boys on that street. Now, we'd walk to school in the morning, come home at noon, go back after lunch, and back in, no buses to carry, nothing. Everybody walked. Now, those were in the horse and buggy days.
Mm-hmm.
When no one was in a hurry, but everybody got there on time. Businessmen, they all had made their appointments. The school children were all on time. We never played hooky, and we just enjoyed going to school. Now, after you were graduated from the elementary school, then you could go to high school. There was only one high school, that was Ryan. Now, you weren't compelled to go. You didn't have to go. But if you wanted to go, you could go. You see, in the old days, an education was not as important as it is today, for the simple reason that nearly all of us figured on following in the footsteps of our fathers and going into their business. And the only people, or the only fellows that were interested in an education, were men that wanted to be professionals, lawyers, engineers, or doctors. Of course, they had to have the education, see?
Is that why you went to the Rand School?
No, I just went to Rand School because I liked it, see? And you couldn't play hooky. If you played hooky, you were expelled and you couldn't come back.
Mm-hmm. Well, what had you heard of the Rand School before you had entered it to make you want to go there?
Oh, well, I just, there weren't many that went to Rand, you know, see? And I really don't know, but I just went to Ram, see? And I think they only had 9 teachers at the time. And Mr. Jewett, he was a French extraction, he was the principal. And there were 8 or 9 other teachers, that's awful. Now, you take, for instance, we never played hooky. And when the circus would come to town, take the Wallace Hagenbeck Circus, or the Sells Brothers, or P.T. Barnum's, the parade would go north on Wick Avenue, and then turn on Madison, and go out to the fairground. Mm-hmm. And the principal would excuse us until the parade was over. We'd all go out and sit in the front and watch the parade.
How old were you when you started at Rand School?
16 years old. You see, we didn't get in to Rand as early as we had the boys do now and the girls. See? Mm-hmm. Because we got in when we were 16 years old. We couldn't play football and during the freshman of the sophomore year, so you were 18 years old before you played your first football game or baseball. So you were almost fully grown. Now we had a wonderful team. We didn't play any high school team. We played prep schools and small universities. And the Youngstown team, we beat them every year. We beat this small college, Westminster College. We beat them. And we played university school in Cleveland, Shadyside Academy in Pittsburgh, and prep schools. See?
Did you used to travel to these schools to play, or did they always come here?
Oh, no, we traveled, yeah. We'd go down to, when we played at Salzburg, that was where Kiske was, we would go to Pittsburgh on Thursday night. We'd spend Friday there, and Friday evening, and we'd go over to Salzburg Saturday morning and play the football game.
And who would pay for all this?
Pardon me?
Who would pay for this, the expenses?
Why, the Rand School. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they pay for the equipment, the players?
Well, sure. Yeah, we didn't buy anything. But our first uniforms looked like Joseph's coat. All different colors, you know, see? And then later on, then we got the orange and the black. And everybody used the orange and the black. But at first we had all kinds of colors.
Did many students or faculty follow the team around?
Oh my goodness, yes. Professor Jewett, he would walk in the mud. He was the principal. Well, he would walk in the mud and just root for the team all the time. Oh, he was wonderful.
Who was the coach?
No coach.
No coach.
We had no coach. But the best players would coach the other team, would tell you what to do. And we practiced in the Ram schoolyard there. That's where we practiced.
Mm-hmm. What other extracurricular activities did you have when you were in school?
Well,
now this, when you were in school, be from what year to what year?
1900. 1 or 2. I was graduated in 1902.
Yeah. Okay, so what other extracurricular activities during this period? Put another way. What did you do for fun while you were going to high school?
What
did you do for fun while you were going to high school?
For fun?
Right.
Well, it wasn't much fun in those days. Now you take every Sunday. There's about 30 boys on Pike Street. We all walked through Mill Creek Park every Sunday. Every Sunday. We walked out through Mill Creek Park. and we had a good baseball team, and when we got older there on Pike Street, but we never destroyed any property, we never stole anything, we never bothered any girls. And we had as tough a gang as there was in the city. We could take care of ourselves, but we didn't, we never got into trouble.
So, did anybody, well, was there ever any conflict between Pike Street and, say, another street?
Oh, yeah. We'd have a scrap with different gangs, and then they'd have a fight, and whoever would win, it's like we would always defend. We had a swimming hole there. We'd always defend that, you know. No one could take that away from us.
Who were some of your friends in this Pike Street?
Oh, it was the Kellys, Gillespies, Brennans, Flints, and Jimmy Dibble. He lived on there. I've had a good story about him.
Okay.
When I first went with the brewery, he came in one day. Mother had him dressed like little Lord Fauntleroy in a plush suit in July, hot. Oh, he had the most beautiful curls you ever saw. And I said, "Jimmy, you look hot." He said, "I am hot." I said, "Do you want your hair cut?" He said, "Will you cut it?" I said, "Sure." So we had 50 head of horses then. And I took him over to the barn boss, Sisler, and I said, "Cut his hair." And he said, "Oh, no." I said, "I'll take it." But I said, "Now, I want you to save all the curls. I'll go back to the plant and get a newspaper and we'll save the curls." Well, we clipped one here and one there and one there. Oh, see, he was a blonde, and after we got him all clipped, there was white spots there, and he looked terrible. So I said, "Jimmy, that isn't very good. How about clipping your head?" He said, "Will you clip?" I said, "Sure, go on, clip." So Sisley clipped his head. And I said, "Now you take these curls home to your mother, because I saved these curls." Now they lived on the west end of Pike Street. And whenever I went to town, that's the way I went. After this, I went the other way. So I went east. Well, Mrs. Dibble was in the office in 15 minutes, and I saw a gun that got down under the desk and went in the wastebasket, see? And she asked Miss Hoss, she said, "Where is he?" She said, "Who?" She said, "Young Renner." "I said, he's around here someplace." She said, "Wait till I catch him. See what he did to my boy?" And she said, "No." Well, he said, "Wait till I catch him. I'm going to slap him all over the street." Well, Mrs. Dibble didn't catch me until 6 weeks later in front of McKelvey's. And she came up and she grabbed me by the neck, collar, and I said, "Now wait a minute. I saved the curls." And I felt her hand loosen and I knew it had her. So she just looked at me and didn't hit me, just turned around, walked away, and never said a word. And after that, Jimmy just had a little tuft of hair right here in the middle of his head.
On these gangs, street, I don't want to call them gangs, but the groups that were, built around the street, for example, your group from Pike Street.
Yeah, we were on Pike Street.
Right. Now, what other streets had
Front gangs? Street had a gang. Uh-huh. They had a pretty tough gang, Front Street.
And who was in this gang? Do you know any of the? Can you name any of the
people? Yes, I did, and I don't remember their names.
What ethnic group were they?
What's that?
Do you remember what ethnic group they were?
No, I don't. In those days, everybody worked in the mills, nearly. Now take on Pike Street, Irish, Germans, and Welsh. They all worked in the mills. And they all chewed tobacco. All of the kids chewed tobacco. I chewed tobacco when I was 9 years old. One day, Mom was sewing a pair of pants of mine, patching them. She found some tobacco, and she said, "Hey, come here. What's this?" I said, "That's a plug of Battle Axe tobacco." She said, "What are you doing with it?" I said, "I'm carrying it for some kid that isn't allowed to carry it." She took me upstairs, took my pants off, and I'm telling you, my bottom blushed for 2 weeks. That's the kind of a spanking I got. And she looked at me and she said, "Listen, that's for lying." I never quit chewing, but I didn't quit lying them.
How many of your Pike Street gang went to the Ray School?
I think only two or three. You see, they didn't go to high school. After you graduated from the elementary school, they didn't go to high school. Didn't have to go, because they would go into business then. They would follow in their fathers or work for their fathers and so on. See, it was only a couple from Pike Street out of the 30 boys that went to Rayne.
Now, when you went to Rayne, did you work in your father's brewery?
Oh, no, not when I went to Rayne. Oh, no. I didn't work there until 1905. Yeah.
So when you went to school, you just went to school?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
What was your first impression of the school when you walked in the first day, when you were a freshman? If you can remember back to that first day. Can you recall what impressed you most about it?
Well, it looked very large, of course, but it wasn't, because it was so much larger than the elementary school. Of course, you didn't know anybody, but you got acquainted very quickly. And after that, it was easy.
So you made friends?
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly?
Yeah. You made friends very quickly. And as I said, there was no violence in those days. Nobody played hooky, and you didn't try to cheat anybody or anything. Everybody worked for everybody else. Everybody helped everybody in those days. Mm-hmm. Different than it is today. Now, I know that.
Once you started school there, did you find yourself becoming or going around more with the students from Rayne than you went around with your Pike Street buddies?
You got what?
Did you find yourself going around more with the students from Rayne than your Pike Street buddies?
No, I just went to Rayne and played football and baseball, but I went with my own gang, see? Mm-hmm. See, the only time we'd be together when we were practicing football or on a trip to play football, or after school sometime.
So the student body at Rayne really wasn't that tight-knit of a group?
Oh, no. They were from all over the city, but there weren't many there, you know. When school was out, you went home. When you're done practicing football or baseball, you went home. Mm-hmm. And then you played with your own gang.
But how many students were in your class?
Oh, I wouldn't know that. I would say there was a couple of hundred students altogether. Because there were about 9 teachers, I think, that's all.
What teachers impressed you the most, that you thought of the most?
Well, Miss Peterson, Mrs. Peterson was, she taught mathematics, she was very good. Miss Pyle was wonderful. Fräulein Kerber, she taught German. I was a good German student because everyone around the brewery speaks German, see. And, Fräulein Kerber and I got along fine. And I think it was...
Did she ever visit your dad's brewery?
What's that?
Did she ever visit your dad's brewery?
Who?
Fräulein Kurl?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think anybody ever did. No, nobody. See, there was Miss Baldwin, Miss Bryce, Miss Hull, Mr. Johnson. I think there were 9 teachers all together, see. Mm-hmm. And
was German your favorite class? Was the German class your favorite class? What did you enjoy?
No. See, German class was a very small class. There weren't many students in that class. But I liked the mathematics, and I liked English, and I liked German because I was a good German student because, you know, as I told you, that mm-hmm. the inside workers of the brewery were all the Germans.
Did you?
I wasn't any good at this manual training. I never made a dovetail joint or a spindle or anything like that. I could make a lot of shavings with a plane, that's all. And I put the shavings down and I chewed tobacco. And the prof chewed tobacco and he came up and spit in my shavings. So I got a me. He made all my dovetail joints and spindles and stuff. I couldn't make them. He spit in my shavings.
was every boy required to take manual training?
Oh no, you didn't have to take that. No. You had to take 4 subjects. You had to take mathematics, English, language. I never took Latin, see? I took German. And history. You had to take 4 subjects. And you could take the manual training, but it wasn't compelled to.
Mm-hmm. About how many hours a day would you say you put in studying while you were going to high school? You can recall.
Well, let's see, we got over there. I don't know whether it was 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And we'd be out at around noon, and back again at 1:30 until about 3:30.
Mm-hmm. Did you go home for lunch?
Oh yes, every day. Walk. As I said before, everybody was on time.
How long did they give you to go back and forth?
An hour and a half. See, we were on the other side of the city, other side of the river. When I went to elementary school and when I went to RAM. I walked to school, walked back at noon, walked back after lunch, walked back at night. No buses in those days, no one to carry around, but everybody was on time. Now that was his unwritten law then. Everybody, if you had made an appointment, you had to be there.
Did many students who went to the RAIN school, did their parents have carriages?
Some, yes.
Would you say the majority?
What's that?
Would you say the majority of students?
Oh, no.
For example, did your parents have a carriage?
Yeah, they had a carriage. And they'd take my sisters, but not me. I didn't go in the carriage. I walked.
Would you say that most of the students at the RAIN school when you were there were from families that had a fair amount of money?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Fair, yeah. And, yes, I'd say that's right.
For example, there, you don't think there were many students there whose parents worked in the steel mills?
No, there weren't. There were some there. But you see, we didn't get in there early, as I said before. We got in there when we were 16 years old. Mm-hmm. We were almost fully grown, so a lot of the boys would go out and get positions, you know.
Okay. What type of grades did you get in?
What's that?
What type of grades did you make in high school, if you recall?
Just fair. I wasn't what you call a good student. Mm-hmm. But I made fair grades. I just passed, but I wasn't a brilliant fellow. Mm-hmm.
But you say you studied and worked hard while you were in school?
No. You see, as I said, an education wasn't so important before the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. Not like it is today. Because you figured on following with your father in his business.
So with most of the students at the Rains School during this time, would you say they had the same attitude?
Absolutely, except the ones that wanted to be doctors, lawyers, or engineers. Those fellows had to study.
Mm-hmm. What about the teachers? How did they accept this attitude?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the teachers, they're fine. They were wonderful.
How would you say your relationship was with the teachers? Was it a friendly one, a reserved relationship?
Oh, friendly, very friendly, yeah. And they all wanted to help you and work with you and stuff like that. And there wasn't anyone there that you could say was mean or had a temper or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We all got along fine.
What about discipline? Was there any need for discipline that you knew of?
Well, sure, you weren't allowed to. In other words, you didn't do anything in those days. You didn't raise hell or anything like that. You didn't do anything like that. Because if you did, they'd throw you out. See, you couldn't even play hooky. If you played hooky, they would expel you and you couldn't come back. You didn't have to go to RAM, see?
Were many students that you knew of thrown out of the school?
No. We went there and we didn't play hooky. See? Mm-hmm.
What about students dropping out for various reasons?
No.
Money or?
No.
Most of the ones that went to started school there finished?
They finished. Most of them that started finished. Yeah.
What were the topics of conversation, as you recall, that went around the school? What did you usually talk about between classes or right after school?
Well, after school, all we'd do was talk about athletics. Mm-hmm. See, we had no coach, and the best players would tell the other fellas what to do and so on, and we work together like that. See?
Mm-hmm. Sounds just like today, so.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you were going to school during a pretty important time in American history, the turn of the century, which is pretty important. Could you share views with certain national figures at that time? For example, what was your opinion of Theodore Roosevelt? What was your opinion of Theodore Roosevelt at that time?
Well, we thought he was a great, great man. Down in wherever he was, he could Cuba? No, we liked him. Mm-hmm. We weren't in politics then, But we liked Theodore Roosevelt. And William Jennings Bryan came there. that was in, I think that was in 1902, though. That's when we had automobiles. Williams, I think it's Brian, he ran for the Democratic presidency, but he lost.
Who did you
say? We didn't monkey much with politics that. Mm-hmm. Not until later.
Who did you like better, Roosevelt or Bryan? Who did you like better, Roosevelt or Bryan?
Oh, Roosevelt. Yeah.
What about when McKinley was assassinated? Was school called off that day? Do you recall the day he was assassinated?
I don't recall that, no. It was from Niles. Mm-hmm. And he was assassinated at a fair. Fair Chicago, was it? I don't know.
But you really don't, you don't recall that day?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
What was your favorite year at the Rand School? Which year? First year, last year, or middle 2 years? Which year did it stuck out the most?
Last year.
Why? Why was it?
Well, we didn't have to do much.
Well, what didn't you have to do that you usually had to do?
Well, your studies weren't as important in your senior year. Maybe they just wanted to get rid of us, I don't know.
Okay. Can you recall your graduation? The day you graduated?
Just faintly.
Now, as you look back on your years at the Rand School, what sticks out the most in your mind? Like, if you could, what immediately comes to your mind when you think of the school?
Well, I don't like to talk about this. See, my nickname is Spitz.
Uh-huh.
And in high school, we made toothpicks about 3 inches long out of metal. And they're very resilient. And every one of us carried a pocket full of BB shot. You put a shot between your teeth, take this toothpick, and you'd be surprised how proficient you would come in shooting and how accurately you could shoot. The girls in the back of the neck and different colors and so on. Miss Pyle was sitting on a desk one day, and all of the football players and baseball players, we all sat in the back. She said, "Renner, come up." I went up. She said, "Sit down." I said, "What's the matter?" She said, "Sit down." I said, "Yeah, but why?" She said, "Will you sit down?" I said, "Certainly I will, but there ought to be a reason why you brought me up here." She said, "You sit down." I sat down. Well, then the fellas started to shoot at me, see, with those BB shot. And they hit me. I'd look up, Miss Pyle, never give me a tumble. So finally she was looking the other way into Mr. Jewett's office, and it was the custom of each class to give a picture to the Rand School. Picture about 2.5 feet high by 7 foot long or 6 foot long, something like that. And there was one in front of me, and I took a handful of shot and I hit that, and all of a sudden I said, "That's it." All those shots come down, I took my shirt off and I went back there and I started to rough up the gang. This pile went down, this pile went down. She said, "Who was it?" I said, "There." Mr. Jewett came up and he expelled them all. I told them who they were. I was very remorseful after I came back for lunch. So I finally went into Mr. Jewett. And I said, "Renner, what do you want?" I said, "Well, now I want to talk to you about that stuff that happened this morning, like 6-year-old kids." He said, "Oh, terrible." Well, I said, you punished the wrong fellas. He said, who did it? I said, I did. He said, you did all of it? I said, I did all of it. He said, you're expelled. I said, okay. And you can't come back until your father comes back and signs up for it. Well, my father was a retiring man. It took him 3 days to go back and vouch for me. Uh-huh. So Miss Strauss, that's the old Strauss and Hirschberg family, Helen Strauss, called me Spitzbub. She was in the German class. Spitzbub, that means troublemaker. See? And Bob Harmon, he said, that's too long. We'll call it Spitz. So he called it Spitz. And that name stuck to me.
What did your dad say about that when you came home?
Oh, in those days, you know, well, he didn't get any licking. But oh boy, he was mad at me. Yeah. You see, in those days, the parents run the kids. They spanked you. If you got a licking in school, they'd give you a licking when you got home, too. They gave you two lickings because they were for that. And like today, by gee, I think the kids run the family, some of them. They don't get punished.
Okay. Now, if you could change anything about your high school.
What's that?
What would be the one thing you would change about your high school if you could have, when you were going there? What one thing would you have wanted to change about the high school? If you had the power to do it?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Not a thing. No.
Is what you consider the perfect high school?
Yeah, I'd say it was fine. We were all pleased. We didn't play hooky. We never had any trouble.
Okay. Have you kept up with the Ryan School since?
Okay.
Did you keep up with
no.
it?
No. I was down there about a week ago. That's the first time I was there in 72 years.
You sent all your children there, right?
Yes, all of the boys went there. All of my sisters went to Ryan. Yeah. My sons all went to Ryan. And then they moved up here to Ryan up on the north side.
Why did you keep sending them to Ryan? Why did you want to send your kids to Ryan?
Because that was the only high school here. And then later on, there was one on the south side and one on the north side, so all of my children went to the north side. Right, great rivalry between the South and the North at those times. Football.
This is a question. You're a Catholic, true?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. How come you didn't send your children to, say, Ursuline High School?
There wasn't any Saint Ursuline.
There was no Ursuline High School for your children?
No. And another thing, you see, they had high schools in not high schools, but they had the academies in different places, the Catholic schools. Well, I wanted my sons to go to school with everybody in Youngstown so they would know the people. In other words, if they went to school someplace else, they didn't know the young people in the town. So I wanted them to go to this high school in Youngstown so they would know everybody in the town that went to school.
Would you say that the Ryan High School now is the same as the Ryan School you went to? Would you consider them to be the same?
Oh, no. It's all different.
In what way do you see it as being different?
Kids play hooky. A lot of times it's 200 or 300 there. Of course, I don't like to talk about that because I don't want to talk about that. That might get me in trouble.
Okay.
See, Mrs. Renner, she's an attendance teacher up there, Mrs. Bob Renner. I don't want to get her in trouble. I don't want that on there.
Okay, fine.
No, no.
Okay. Let me switch the sides of the tape here. Let me run this a little bit longer here. We'll talk, if you want to continue talking about what happened to you after you got out of high school, that's fine with me. It's up to you.
Well.
What did you do once you graduated?
What's that?
What did you do after you graduated?
Well, I graduated in 1902. And then I went to Cornell University for 2 years. And I came back and went into business with father. See, as I said, I wasn't a very good student.
What did you study at Cornell?
Nothing.
What were you supposed to study at
Cornell? Well, let's see. I don't remember that. I think a straight course, not the academic course, but as I say, I was a poor student. And I only went there to play football and baseball.
So that took up just about all your time?
Oh, I had I had a lot of time because I had a fraternity. I joined the ATO, Alpha Tau Omega fraternity. And had some good friends there. And then I came back and went to in business with my father.
Want to talk a little bit about your with the business?
With the business?
Right. You want to talk a little about that?
Well, I started out by visiting all taverns. I never drank much. I carried a hand-carved ivory jar. I would go in these taverns and say, all right, come on, fellas, come on, have a bottle of Renner's beer with me. Wait till I see if I can drink with you. And I'd put this ivory frog on the bar. I'd say, I'm sorry. Two of them there. They both want to jump. Give me a cigar. Now, if I hadn't done that, at least two or three people would have said, don't you drink your own product? So I didn't drink much, see? But I would visit the taverns and so on. Later on, I branched out, went all through Ohio, up to Ashtabula and so on, see? I did the outside work for the company.
Such as?
Yeah.
What was some of the work you did that, the outside work?
Well, I'd go from place to place. I'd open up a spot, or I'd go up to Ashtabula, and I'd go to the taverns, and I'd try to sell them beer, and I would sell them beer. And there was the Italian club up there. I had to go up there once a year. When they had their annual meeting, and I had to be there. I'd be there all night. I was the only one, only brewer. I got their business, see? And I had the card trick, which is the finest card trick you've ever been done. I've only taught 6 or 7 fellows that card. And I had to go up and do that.
Did it help you sell beer?
Oh, you better do.
What other breweries were in town at the same time?
Smith Brewing Company, that was the only one. And then later there was a brewery that opened up on just a small place. So they called it the Youngstown Brewery. It didn't last very long, though.
About how many people did you employ at the brewery?
Oh, a little over 100. About 100, I'd say. Drivers inside, bottle house and so on. About 100.
How did you make your deliveries? How did your dad make his deliveries before the automobile, before the truck?
Horses and wagon. We had 50 head of horses and had a wagon, and you put the beer on the wagon, the halves and barrels and so on, and delivered. That was before the time of the automobile.
And where did you keep the horses?
In the barn.
How many acres of land did you have beside the road?
No acres of land. Just in the barn, that's all. And all of these were big horses, see? They all weighed, from 1,400 to 1,800 pounds. Because they weren't in a hurry, see, but they were great big horses. Just like you've seen the Anheuser-Busch. Those horses all weighed 1,700 pounds.
About how much did they cost a piece, a head?
Oh, $200, $250. I used to buy the horses. Go out and sit on the farm fence with the farmer. Look at the horses. How old was that horse? Oh, he said that's 60 years old. I didn't know. Want something? No? No, okay. I'd like to give you $200 for that horse. No. So finally, we'd come to $2.25, $2.10, $2.50. And we had wonderful horses.
How long did they usually work, the horses?
Oh, for years. In other words, my brother was kicked by a horse and killed when I was just a little kid. 7 years old, or a little less than that. And he and I were playing in the back of the house when a fellow had his two horses there, and they picked up and kicked my brother in the head and died. They wanted father to shoot the horse, and father said, "Why? That isn't the horse's fault. He didn't know what he was doing." Well, that horse lived for 15 years. And it was a gray horse. Living in a wagon. Pull a wagon for 15 years. Why would you shoot him? Because that, he didn't know what he was doing, no?
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had just one brother, five sisters. My brother was killed.
How old was he then?
He was about, six or seven, I think. I don't know. But he was a little fellow.
When did they start switching over from horses to, say, trucks or so to deliver?
About 1904 or 5.
And how many trucks did you?
Well, we didn't have, the truck would do more business than the horses. Because they would travel faster. And they could carry more. I'd say we had about five trucks. Big trucks.
Did you still keep the horses?
And we might, you see, when the people that bought the Isley Dairy, when those Isleys came to town, they bought their first two teams of horses from me, and the harness and the wagon. And the Isleys came to town. That was before the days of the trucks.
What year did you really take over running the brewery?
Well, for years I did outside work. Mm-hmm. And I finally, when my father retired, then I became president of the company. But when that was, I just don't know. Mm-hmm. See, I did all the outside work.
And you want to talk a little bit about Prohibition? You know, what your view of Prohibition was?
Well, I think it was wrong. Because, you see, that was when the violence started. Because they would sell beer, sell whiskey and stuff on the under the table. That's when all the violence started. And take for instance when we closed. Two or three times people came over and wanted to run the plant. He said no.
These people, what were their, did they have any other business besides?
Sure. I don't like to mention a name. Al Capone. I don't like to mention it. I don't want to mention it.
He came personally?
Huh?
He came personally?
No, I wanted to run the place. Wanted us to run the place. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a story.
Okay.
I don't want that other bottle of Al Capone. I don't want that in there.
Well, you can just scratch it out.
Here's one. A fella came to us after we closed the plant, see? He called up my wife. He said, is Mr. Renner there? She said, yes. She says, is it Spitz? And she says, it's Spitz. I went to the phone. He said, hello, Mr. Renner? Yeah, Spitz? I said, yeah, this is Spitz. Well, he said, I have no name. I said, well, this is very interesting. Who are you? He said, I have no name. But I'm down at the Ohio Hotel. And I'd like to talk to you. I said, okay, I'll come down. Well, I paid you or you paid me? He said, I told you I had no name. I'm a little fellow. I have a fur coat, fur collar on my coat, and a derby hat. I went down, looked around, and walked over and said, hello, derby hat. How are you? And he said, hello, Spitz. Have you got a car? And I said, no. He said, where can we talk? I said, I'll get a room. He said, oh, no room. I said, this is getting more interesting every minute. I said, have you got a car? I said, yes. I said, let's take a ride. I said, okay. Went out and got in the car, drove out to Mill Creek Park. I said, okay, it's your turn to talk. What do you want? He said, I want you to run the brewery. And I want $2,500 cash every week. And you have to do what I tell you. And I said, well, who are you? He said, I'm from the government. And I said, you'll have to prove that to me. Well, he said, okay. Every time you get a wire from me, exactly 24 hours later, the flying squadron will be at your brewery and they'll inspect the plant. So, we made an appointment for 10 days. And during those 10 days, two or three times he'd wire me in. And in 24 hours, the flying squadron would be there and they'd say, Mr. Renner, we want to inspect the brewery. I said, you're right ahead. They'd walk in one door and come right out the same way and said, everything is fine. So in 10 days, Dirty Hat came back. Well, I said, you proved that you're from the government. When I told my father, he says, you can't run that brewery. None of us were ever in jail, and none of us are going to jail, and you can't run the brewery. No, I said, no. Let me look into this a little further. He said, no. Well, I said, I'm going to look into it. He said, all right, but you can't run. I went to Mr. Ed Moore, who is a wonderful attorney here in town. I told him about it, that this fellow was from the government and so on. He said, I'll give you the protection of the government. Well, then I had to get state protection, see, and local protection. Well, when Mr. Moore looked up the state protection, he said, no. He said, those fellows will take money, and if the trail gets hot, they'll turn you in. And I don't think he'll do that. So anyhow, Dirty Hat came back again, and I got in the car and went up. I said, no, can't do it. Said the fellows here, the inspectors of the state will turn you in. I said, they turned in Lamoureux over at Newcastle, and he shot himself. He turned in Wiedemann down at Cincinnati, and the father died of a broken heart. I said, here's $200 for your time. He said, you don't owe me 5 cents, but... I said, okay, who sent you? He said, your Pennsylvania brothers. He said, your friends in Pennsylvania. You know, we all in good business. Now, I don't want to say that, see? Why should I say that? Because, see, then I just want to tell you that story. But that's a true story.
Hi. Is this my...
Yeah.
Okay.
Prohibition started in 1918. And the amendment was repealed in 1933. So we opened our brewery then. But in the old days, no one came into the city to sell us, to sell their product there. But after Prohibition, everybody came in. Now, we made our beer out of the water, the meander water, which cost us a lot of money. And the big fellows came in and undersold us in the old market, so we had to close. And in 1933, 852 breweries reopened in the United States. Today there are only about 50. The big fella ate up the little fella. He just couldn't carry on. In other words, when they come in and undersell you on your own market, then you can't compete.
Interesting. What did you do in between the time Prohibition started and Prohibition ended?
Well, we had real estate. And I'd collect the rents and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Did you always expect to be able to reopen the brewery?
What's that?
Did you always expect to be able
to
reopen?
Oh, We didn't know. So, see, when the... See, it was until 1933, when the 18th Amendment was repealed. But Rootstrauss, you know, did that. That was when violence started during Prohibition. You know, I enjoy talking about the days before the turn of the century. It would bring back fond recollections and happy memories. The old days, I really enjoyed them.
Oh, Anything else you want to talk about? Or do you feel you said all you want to say? Thank you very much, Mr. Renner. This is interview number two with Mr. Emil Renner for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the Rayon School. It's being done at Mr. Robert Renner's residence at 43 Gypsy Lane. The date is December 19th, 1974. It's approximately 1 p.m. Mr. Renner, you say you were involved in the financing of the Rayon Stadium. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
I'd like to preface my remarks now by singing a song that I wrote many, many years ago. It's a true history of Youngstown. And it indirectly involves all of the high schools, because as Youngstown grew and these different sections grew, a high school was built in each section. And today, I think, there are 8 high schools, including Ursuline and Mooney. Now I'm going to the song. Many years ago, here in Ohio, near the Pennsylvania line, was a soft coal mine. Like the Topsy we know, it began to grow right into a town known the whole world round. They called it Youngstown, Ohio. I call it Youngstown, my hometown. It's known as Youngstown, Ohio. And as Youngstown grew, many times its size, rolling mills began to blow smoke in our blue skies. We seldom saw day, that is not a joke. Smog really made hay. We love soot and smoke. That's why it's Youngstown, Ohio. We call it Youngstown, my hometown. It's known as Youngstown, Ohio. You meet nice folks here as you gad and roam, folks that came from every land calling Youngstown home. And when you learn to love, and when you learn to care, you wouldn't trade Youngstown for a town elsewhere. That's why it's Youngstown, Ohio. I call it Youngstown, my hometown. That's known as Youngstown, Ohio. Now let's go back to Rayon and South.
Okay.
That's when the rivalry began. Now I think this. I don't know. You see, I remember before the Market Street Bridge was built, the city limits were only one street above Falls Avenue at the turn of Market Street. That was the city limits. But the South Side grew rapidly, and finally this South Side high school structure was built, a beautiful school. They built a stadium, a football field, and a track. Now, I think they had the first football field. I don't think we had a football field, because when Rayon moved to Ohio and Bonita, they didn't have a football field. So Lucius McKelvey, Ernie Schwarzwelder, and I borrowed $30,000 from the First National Bank, and we had the Rayon Stadium football field and track built. Now, the field was 18 inches of sand, gravel, ash, sand, gravel, ash, and the top with 2.5 feet of the finest black soil we could find. The seating capacity was about 13,000 people. Now, that's when the rivalry began. And the rivalry between Rayon High School and South High School would make the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry look like a kindergarten rivalry. Now, that's absolutely true. You couldn't imagine it. Now, the men and women from the north side, you see, we always played on Thanksgiving Day. And on the north side, the men and women, they carried or wore yellow chrysanthemums, hat bands, and noisemakers. And the South Rooters, they wore bright red flowers and noisemakers, because their colors were bright red. Now that's when the rivalry began. And it was always a pleasant rivalry, no violence at all, no violence, but it was a pleasant rivalry. And when the team would lose, whichever team would lose, there'd be a shadow over the either the north or the south for 2 or 3 days, you know, until they worked out of it and said, well, we'll take them next year, see, you know.
Can I ask you a question on this? On the buying stadiums, now, I remember at the end of our conversation last time, you said that you really were not involved after you graduated with Ray and that much after you graduated, right?
Oh, what's that?
Remember, I think last time, our last conversation, you said that after you had graduated, you really weren't that involved with Ray in school anymore.
Oh, only this, yeah. We built the stadium.
Yeah.
And then Lucius and I were awfully interested in the high school team, see?
What?
Now, well, 1 year we had them dressed like old-time undertakers, see? Black hats, black helmets, black shirts, black pants, black stockings with an orange band. And boy, they looked terrible, see?
So it was your interest in the football team that made you buy the stadium?
Yeah. After we built the stadium, sure, we stayed on in the interest in the football team, but nothing else from Ryan. Now, see, where did I finish it? Yeah, I said that we built the stadium. That's all about what. Now, when you turn it on again, I want to tell you about the crowds, how they grew. See?
Uh-huh.
The crowds grew until we had 1 year 20,000 people at the Ram.
When was that? Do you remember when that was?
I don't remember, but that was the last game because we had the seating people from over at Newcastle build temporary seats on both sides, so we had 20,000 people there. See?
Was this in the 30s?
Oh, I don't remember that. I don't remember that. And then when the high schools come in, that gradually cut out because they were permitted to play at South or Ram on Thanksgiving Day, and that's when the whole thing fell apart.
Well, if you bought the stadium, you and Mr. Schwarzwalder and Mr. McKelvey, how come you didn't have a say-so in who used the field?
Well, I'll tell you why. Oh, no, because, you see, here, I want to go on with this, because, you see, we wanted them to take the note off our hand, and they wouldn't do it.
Who, what, the Board of Education?
No, the Ryan Board. So Lucius McKelvey told them, now listen, are you going to put it on?
Okay.
Oh, well now, you see, as we borrowed this $30,000 from the bank, First National, built a stadium, and then we wanted the Rand trustees to take the note. And they wouldn't pick up the note, but they were making a lot of money on the football games. So Lucius McKelvey said, listen, if you don't pick up that note, we are going to hold price fights there until it's paid off. And they immediately picked up the note.
Uh-huh. Now, how did the rest of the teams get to use the stadium? How did the rest of the schools, what permitted them to use the stadium?
Well, you see, as the high schools were built, Rain and South didn't dominate the Thanksgiving Day. So other high schools played here, played at South, and so on, and finally, until now, there's no interest anymore. Not as much as there was. I don't think now they have over 4,000 people at a game, do they? I don't know.
But were you angry about other teams using the stadium? If Rain wasn't even playing, for example, say if East and...
Well, we had no say about that. That was the Board of Education.
But what was your feelings about it?
Well, we didn't like it because it just spoiled the rivalry between Rain and South.
Did you have any say-so in the construction of the stadium? For example, did you three pick the construction company?
Oh, yes. We told them what we wanted. We see that and out like to that grounds, you know. See, there was sand, gravel, ash, sand, gravel, ash, and 2.5 feet of the finest black soil we could find.
What year was the construction? What
year? I can't answer that.
And it cost $30,000 to build the stadium. Yeah. Do you know what construction company did it?
Well, I don't remember that either. No. But you see, as these other high schools came in, that spoiled the Thanksgiving Day between Rain and South, because they had the privilege of playing Rain or South in all the different high schools, see? So gradually, it fell away.
When's the last time you were at the Rain Stadium? Do you recall, or the last time you were
there? Oh, I haven't been there for many, many years. I think, I can't answer that, I don't know. No, because you see, you lost interest. You never saw, so you can't imagine the rivalry between the Rain and the South. And then afterwards, everything just died. And, with so many high schools in town, I know they don't have the attendance that they had years ago. I know that. One year we had 20,000 people at Rain.
Do you actually think that you three would have held prize fights there if the...
Why, sure, we had to pay the note off. After all, they were making big money, but they wouldn't pick up the note. So Lucius McKelvey, we were all interested in boxing and stuff like that, and he said, if you don't pick up this note, we're going to hold prize fights until the stadium is paid off. And they picked it up immediately.
Were they paying you rent or anything for the stadium?
No.
No payment at
all? No payment.
Uh-huh. And at that time, did you have a say-so on what teams played there? At that time, did any other teams play in Rain Stadium besides Rain?
No, we had nothing to say about that. We had nothing to say about that. That's up to the Board of Education. You see, this was before the high schools came in and played. But when the high schools got there, then they had the privilege of playing Rain and South, and Rain and South then wouldn't meet for maybe, 4 or 5 years on Thanksgiving. And it just died. The interest died.
When was the last Rain South game you were? When was the last time you attended a Rain South game?
Well, I can't answer that. I think that was...
Do you remember who was playing
was
in it?
Was really? No. Well, Hyman Minutia, and I think Bill Renner, playing quarterback, Wally Bevan was the coach. And South High had a wonderful coach, Busty Ashbaugh. I would compare him with Woody Hayes. That's the kind of a coach he was. He was from the north side. Mm-hmm. But, he was a wonderful coach and a wonderful fellow. Mm-hmm. But the year we dressed him up like undertakers, the old-time undertakers, black helmets, black shirts, black pants, black stockings, with just an orange band.
Now, you chose the uniforms. Did you buy the uniforms, too?
Oh, no, we didn't buy the uniforms. No, that was the land bought those. Oh, no, we didn't buy the uniforms.
But you picked the colors.
We picked the colors at you.
Did they allow you to do this?
Yeah, we were interested. Okay. Mr. Miller was the principal up there then.
Do you remember who were some of the best players at that time? Who were some of the best players the first year the stadium was in use? Do you remember that?
Al Sebastian, Hyman Minutia, I'm sorry, I can't remember those names, because, they were wonderful. I don't remember them.
Did you consider the stadium to be better than South High Stadium?
What's that?
Did you consider the Rayan Stadium to be better than the South Stadium?
Oh, yes, because we seated more people there. Mm-hmm. See, the South, I think, seated 12,000. But one year we had to put in these temporary seats, and we had 20,000 people there.
How much did the price of a ticket go up from before?
Not much, no. I think the price of the ticket was only a dollar and a half for an adult. And I think 50 cents for a pupil.
Now this was in the 1920s, around there?
I don't remember that. I don't remember. You never saw such rivalry in your life. No violence. See, in those days there were no violence. It was a friendly rivalry.
Notice violence any place else in the city? Was there violence any place else in the
no,
city during that time?
No. No violence in the city until after the First World War.
So the stadium was built before the First World War? Was the stadium built before the First
World
War?
Oh, yes. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Did you, when you decided to build a stadium, did you go around looking at other ones to, you know, for the model?
No.
You just left it up to the construction company?
Yeah, we left it up to the people who built it.
Did the Board of Education or the Rayan Board of Trustees make any suggestions on the stadium to you?
No,
they had nothing to do with
nothing
it either?
Nothing to do with it. We built it. And then we wanted them to pay for it, and they wouldn't pick up the note.
What was their reasons for not picking up the note?
Well, I don't know. But they were making money there because they were, you see, the attendance grew year after year. When we played at South, when we played at Rayan, attendance every year grew, until finally it hit the 20,000. And then when the other high schools came in, it died.
Did you get any part of the profits from the gate?
Oh, no, we got no profits.
This is even before the school picked up the note?
Oh, sure, we got no profit. No. We wanted them to pick up the note.
Well, when you agreed to build the stadium, did you ask them if they would pick up the note before you built?
No, I don't think so. Because we figured they would pick it up.
But you never talked to the officials or anything before
well,
that?
Well, I think we spoke to them, but we didn't get any place, no.
Why did you go ahead and build it then, if there was still nothing definite?
Because we were interested in the football team, that's why. And we were interested in Rayan.
Did you think at the time you built the stadium that you might not ever see that money again?
Oh, no, we thought we knew that they'd pay us off. They had to do it because then they were having such crowds and they made money. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't pay us off, see? So Lucius said, now listen, if you don't pay us off, we're going to hold price fights here until the stadium is paid for, and they immediately picked up the notes.
What reasons did they give for not picking
it
up?
They didn't give any reason.
They just said they wouldn't do it.
No, that's the way they did it. See?
That was the only thing you used is pressure, just the threat of prize fights.
That's right. Yeah.
Why do you think this made them change?
They didn't want prize fights there.
People
were against prize fights.
Were they illegal?
No, they weren't illegal at that time. But, you know, they didn't want prize fights in the school. No, that's a funny situation. We got him from, I think, Toledo.
He picked up Wally Bevins from Toledo.
Wally Bevins of Toledo brought him in here.
Was he coaching a high school there or a college? Or?
He was holding high school, wonderful coach. And we brought him in here.
And how much did you, do you know what salary you offered him?
I think we paid him a little more than the Board of Education.
Now, who paid? The school or did you, Mr. McKellen?
Oh, no, the school paid him. The school paid him.
Do you think the Board of Education knew about that extra money?
No.
Did you personally get involved in any coaching aspects of the game?
No.
How many coaches did they have? How many coaches did they have at that time? Just one?
Just one. Just Wally Evans.
About how many players came out for the team usually?
I'd say about 40. 35 to 40.
Uh-huh. And usually, how many male students were there at Rayen at that time?
Oh, I can't answer that.
Would you say it was a good percentage of the male students?
Oh, yes. You see, in the early days, you didn't have to go to high school. In my day, you didn't have to go. And if you played hooky, they expelled you and you couldn't come back. But this was when they had to go to high school.
About how much did it cost? Do you know how much it cost to equip a football player back then?
No, I don't remember that. But we bought them the best material we could find because we were interested in all those boys. And I'm sorry that I can't remember the names of the players. Because, see, they were wonderful.
Like when you picked out the uniforms of the team,
Yeah. You
picked them out on your own with the school?
Just that year.
Oh, just that year.
Just the year that we dressed them up in black.
And the school picked up the bill, no question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they picked up the bill.
But after that, the school picked out the uniforms, everything.
Yeah.
That
was changed then, see.
Was that sort of like a reward for building the stadium, you think? Or
what's that?
Allowing you to pick out the uniforms. Is that like a reward for building the stadium?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that. But that, you ought to have seen that ball game.
Was Mr. Miller a big football fan? Was Mr. Miller a big football fan?
Not especially. He wasn't as a football fan as Professor Jewett was down at Ole Ran. But he was a nice man, a very nice principal.
Who was the man that kept saying they wouldn't pick up the note? Which member of the board, or which member of the board of trustees was heading it at the time?
Oh, I don't know that either.
You don't even remember? You don't remember
don't
the person
that.
Who was? Who said
they finally picked up the note.
Okay. Now, when you paid the $30,000, when you got the loan, the three of you, was that split evenly, $10,000 apiece?
Well, we just went on the note, the three of us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Was it considered a large loan at that time?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. Now, when the brewery burned down, boiler blew up. Did I tell you about that story?
When you were very small, when it blew up? You talk about that time?
I was only 7 years old.
Yeah, you said that first.
Brewery blew up and burned to the ground. Father was broke. He only had $18,000 insurance. And Henry Yardley called him in. He was president of the Mahoning First National Bank. And he said, how much money do you need? Father said, I need $35,000. I've got $35,000 from a malt man in Pittsburgh, and I need another $35,000. Henry Garrick rolled him out a check for $35,000, and Father said, I have no security. He said, I know. He said, you're a good, strong man. I could. So he had no security, and he just signed a note.
What security did you have to put up for the loan? The one for Rand Steady?
Not any.
None of the three had to put up? None of you three had to put
no,
up any
no,
security?
No, we didn't put up anything. Because we were all in business, you know, see? And in those days, as I said now, you see, Father got $35,000 from the bank. No security. He got $35,000 from Mr. Lou Cyan in Pittsburgh, no security.
Did you ask the school to pick up the note the year the stadium was built, or was it a couple
well, sure,
years
we,
later?
We wanted them to pick it up immediately, see.
And how long did it take between the time you asked them and the time they eventually?
I'd say about 3 or 4 years.
So for three or four years, you three paid on the stadium, paid back on the loan for three or four years.
I don't remember that. But I know it was at least 3 years before they picked up the note. Because we wanted them to pick up the note, and Lucius McKelvey told him, he said, now if you don't pick it up, we're going to hold price fights here until the stadium is paid off.
But they still waited 3 years before they did pick up the note.
Or two or three, I don't remember.
But it was at least a year.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was two or three years, I know.
Uh-huh. And so in between that time, how was the loan paid then, in between that time?
Well, just the interest. Yeah. In those days, everybody trusted everybody. Everybody gave consideration to everybody. And as I said, there was no violence. Violence started after the First World War. Oh, there was a few stick-ups and stuff like that, but no one was shot or killed. Youngstown was a wonderful city. Today you're afraid to go out.
How much violence did you notice during Prohibition? Was there a lot of violence in the city during Prohibition?
After Prohibition.
After Prohibition?
Yeah, as soon as Prohibition started. See, that's when the violence started.
Even more so than after World War I?
Well, you see, that was about the same time. Prohibition came in about 1918 or 19. Uh-huh. And that was right, and the World War was on then. Uh-huh. And right after the World War and Prohibition, that's when the violence started.
Did you know anybody personally who was a victim of this violence during this time?
Sure. I told you, didn't I tell you about that Venusia, the Italian banker?
Mm-hmm. Right. No. I think your phone's ringing right now.
City limits were just up one street above Falls Avenue.
What was after that? What was that considered? After Falls Avenue, what did they consider that area beyond that?
Well, after that is when the South Side grew rapidly. Went right out, see? And that was before they built the South High.
What was on the other side of Falls Avenue before it was within the city limits? Was it forest or woods or what?
Yeah, farms.
Farms.
Farms, yeah. And you see, this was a coal mines here in the early days. It was my son's coal mine. And then the rolling mills came in, see?
Can you remember before the mills were here? Can you remember the time before the mills were here? Or at least before they started to grow?
When I was 7 years old, I wouldn't remember that, but after that I remember the Brown Bonnell Mill, and I remember the Todd Foundry, William Todd Foundry, and the Moore and Reaper Works right across from our home, across the river. That burned down, okay? And Sheeton Tube was built, I think, in 1900 or 1901. Sheeton Tube down at Camel and Briar Hill. Oh, we had wonderful factories here. Wonderful.
When you took over the brewery, did you continue to live in the house where you lived when you were young? Continue to live in the house your father had?
When I took over the brewery. No, that was in 19... You see, Father built his home in 1907 on Park Avenue, and my home too, and I lived there.
Where was that on Park?
Michigan.
Park in Michigan?
Mission Park in Michigan. Uh-huh. You've seen that house over there, haven't you?
With the pillars? Right.
That was Father's home. We sold it to Patty Ross for $24,000. He couldn't build it today for the $500,000. That was in the early days.
Did you associate much with the Wicks or the Todds or
no,
any of those
no.
people? Did you ever meet them?
I used to play billiards with Mr. Todd, Mr. William Todd.
Can you talk a little about playing billiards down at the old Todd Hotel? That's where you used to play, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Todd Hotel. And down at George Moore's billiard room where the Federal Bank is now. That's where Mr. Todd and I used to play. Mr. William Todd, he was a very good billiard player.
Did you ever think of doing it, of doing it more than you did, for example, going professionally? Did you ever think of it?
For 14 years, I played in national and international tournaments.
Uh-huh.
I never won. I was runner-up 5 times. Played in New York, Chicago, all over the country. And now, today, billiards is a lost art. I don't play it anymore.
You don't play it anymore?
No. Used to have tournaments.
Who were some of the good players around here?
Well, the best player here is Danny Rand. I taught him how to play 3 cushions, and I tried to get him into the national tournament, but they wouldn't let him in.
Why?
And I was after them for years to put Danny in because I said he'll run 1, 2, 3. I know he will.
Why would they let him in?
But they wouldn't let him in. They finally wrote me a letter and said the only way we let him in is if you have a tournament in Youngstown at a club. Well, we didn't have any clubs here that would take on a tournament for a week. So they just wouldn't let us in.
Who were some of the people you played? Some prominent.
Well, the 2 Appleby brothers in New York, I'll tell you a good story about that. Their father was a multimillionaire, and he hired Al Cutler to teach his sons to play billiards. Al Cutler was a professional, paid him $250 a month. And I would beat one of those Applebys 1 year, but the other brother would beat me. Each year I'd beat one of them, but the other fellow would beat me. See, and I never won a tournament. I was runner-up, as I said, 5 times. Well, now, this professional finally died. And after we quit playing, and my sons moved down to Bronxville, New York, I used to go down to New York to see him. And I always go in and see the Applebys. I went in and saw Edgar Appleby, and said, "Will you have a drink?" And I said, "Sure." So he sent his secretary out to get the ice and ginger ale and stuff like that. And he said, "Do you want to drink the Cutler?" And I said, "Sure." So he opened the desk and he pulled out a beautiful urn. And I said, "Is that Cutler?" He said, "That's Cutler." Well, I said, "What about his wife?" He said his wife wouldn't accept him, wouldn't take him. So I took him and had him cremated. Well, year after year, I'd go down there and see Edgar Appleby and have a drink, sure. Drink the Cutler, sure. Out would come Cutler in the urn, see? The last year I went down there, about the 4th time, I went in and have a drink, sure. He said, "What about the Cutler?" Said his wife picked him up, made up with him.
That's a true story.
Yeah. I had some of the funniest experiences that you ever heard of.
About how many hours a week did you usually put in at your brewery? When you were running the brewery, about how many hours a week did you put in?
Did I what?
Did you put in running your brewery? You.
Oh, I used to put in a lot of time. I'd go over there early, and I used to go around all over the state of Ohio to boost our business, you know. You see, we did business all over the state, and I'd go in and I'd say, "Come on, boys, have a bottle of Renner's beer with me. Wait till I see if I can drink with you." And I carried an ivory frog, handmade ivory frog, and I put it on the bar. said, "I'm sorry, fellas, I can't drink with you. There's two of them there, and they both want to jump. Give me a cigar." Now, if I hadn't said that, at least two of you fellas would say, "What's the matter? Don't you drink your own product? See?" And I didn't care to drink. I would drink once in a while, but never to excess. People that drink at home do not drink to excess. That is what happened years ago. Now, maybe they do now, but I don't know now. People that drank at home do not drink to excess. $10, $20, and he taught me this trick. You never saw anything like it, I tell you. It'll take about an hour to teach you. In other words, you can cut the cards as often as you want to, and you can take out all the cards you want, and I'll tell you every one of them. And you say, "Now, what suit is the 40th card?" And I'll tell you, it's a club, right, a spade, or a heart, right away. There's nothing like it. Greatest trick you ever saw. And I'll be glad to teach it to you. I've only taught 8 fellows. I made them all promise never teach anybody else that trick. And they all, I use it all through Cornell. And Jackie Keogh used it all through state. Luke Cochran's son used it all through college. He never saw anything like it. It's the greatest trick in cards. Yeah.